Hi, this is Justine Toe, and you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, in the last couple of times we've been on this program, we've been talking about the impact of Christianity on Western culture, and particularly in light of the criticisms that suggest that Christianity has given us things that we'd rather be without, and that it's therefore time to shrug it off and move on to something else. So I'm here with Simon Smart. Hey, Simon.
Hey, Justin.
And we've been speaking about the way that Christianity has shaped the Western world in profound ways. And while there have been some regrettable things that are part of that legacy, there are plenty of ways that our society has benefited immensely from Christianity. So we're going to continue that discussion today. So Simon, in the first week you talked about cultural pursuits. What kind of contribution has Christianity made in that area?
Yeah, we started out a bit lighter. We're talking about art and literature and also music, education and architecture and the way Christianity has shaped and contributed to those things.
Yeah, and last time you also talked about the influence of Christianity on the rise of modern science, which is perhaps surprising for some people, and on the West coming to understand humility, of all things, as a virtue, and also the importance of charity. And also, you know, we talked about a lot on this program, the foundations of modern democracy as well. Well, today we're going to be talking about the human person. You know, what contribution has Christianity made in understanding the way that we view human life? Is it more special? We talked to a couple of people on the street and here's what they had to say.
I think we're the only beings that understand the difference between good and evil. It's not only about if it's good for you, then that's okay. You know, you can do it as long as it's not apparently harming anyone else. I think there is a greater sense, and this is common across all the religions, that there is an absolute sense of right and wrong somewhere.
What makes us different is that we are the caretakers of this creation on God's behalf.
That we actually have the ability to reflect, the ability to plan. We actually have consciousness of that we live and that we die, that animals don't have.
And that uniqueness, I think, has to come from an entity or power beyond ourselves, certainly a wisdom beyond ourselves.
Whenever someone is, there's an example, someone's lost at sea. Now, we saw that a few years ago with this 16-year-old sailor from America, Abby Sunderland. She was lost about as far from land as you can ever be in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And, you know, people send boats and aeroplanes. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars looking to rescue this young woman. And in this case, happily, they did rescue her. Now, no one questions that that's something worth doing. We all assume that every human life is precious to that extent, that we would spend that sort of money and effort in finding one person. But it's worth remembering that not every culture thinks this way. Not throughout history, perhaps not today, but certainly not the culture that Christianity was born into in the first century in the Roman world. But this view of the value of the human person, it comes from somewhere. It doesn't just exist in nature like rabbits and birds and trees and so on. It emerges from a story. And I want to argue that it comes out of this the Christian story. I want to argue that the legacy of that story, even when our culture has largely forgotten the story itself and the reason for the belief, it remains. And we benefit from it.
So in your mind, this understanding of the human nature as super precious, you know, actually comes out of Christianity. It's not just this accident of history.
That's right. The Jewish and Christian faith. So in the Old Testament, in Genesis, we read that humans are made in God's image. They're God's special representatives. They're the high point of God's creation, of the cosmos. The image of God's status then is taken in the New Testament. So Christianity takes this idea of being made in the image of God and turbocharges it, if you like. It's sort of in the most emphatic sort of way imaginable by God himself arriving in human form, the incarnation, we call that. It takes us into unprecedented territory in terms of bestowing and giving to every person, every individual, a dignity and an exalted status. So, Justine, this is a massive shift in terms of how we understand ourselves and each other.
I mean, Simon, you mentioned the Roman world. You know, I mean, before Christianity, there were large groups of people all without rights. You know, we're talking about slaves, people who were poor, people who were foreigners, non-citizens, criminals, colonized people. They weren't actually considered as people. They were in some ways just chattel, right? So they had no dignity, no face before the law.
That's right. And now, look, our society is far from perfect. We all know that. We still have our inequalities and our injustices and so on. But when we have those, we're very aware that they violate deep moral principles. Now, David Bentley Hart, who's one of my favourite authors, he writes a lot about this, and he says this is the reason we have that understanding is only because we live in the long shadow of a civilization formed by beliefs that every person of whatever status or rank is a life more precious than gold. It reminds me of Ben Witherington, the theologian, who talks about Galatians 3:28, the verse from the New Testament that says, "There is now neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." He says that's the Magna Carta of human freedom. So it creates a situation where, at its best, Christianity brings together in this same one community people of all sorts of different ages and genders, races, professions, education levels, and so on. Baristas with barristers, plumbers and surgeons, professors with skateboarders. It's a really powerful story to unite people.
Now, Simon, you mentioned women, right? Now, Christianity isn't always thought of as the great liberator of women, and that's putting it very lightly, I think. But how do you think it was good news for women when Christianity was born?
You're right, but let's focus on the early centuries of Christianity. In the early years, Christianity was mocked as the religion of slaves and women. It's because it was such an attractive faith for women. It drew women in huge numbers. It's one of the reasons Christianity grew so quickly. And it gave a new status to women, which was radical. It was an enormous shift. So there's lots of practical examples of the way that we saw this play out. So Christianity, for instance, forbade the practice of exposing infants, which were very often girls, left out on the rubbish dumps outside cities. It said, no, we don't do that. You don't do that for people who are made in God's image. It insisted on a communal provision for widows. And widows and orphans really were the most helpless class of people in the ancient world. The other thing was Christian husbands were now expected to be as faithful to their wives as they expected their wives to be faithful to them.
Which sounds hilarious given that we would naturally assume that today, but I get the impression that in the ancient world it was expected that men would be unfaithful. You know, they had a sexual nature that couldn't be tamed, and so they were obliged to just, you know, follow that out. But that women, of course, weren't allowed to have this as well. So they had to actually stick by their wayward husbands but not, you know, seek their pleasure elsewhere.
Yeah, and so it's actually revolutionary when you read Paul writing in the New Testament to say that women now have as much demand on their husband's body as the male does with his wife. It totally changes the status of women. There's also the provision for women to live out their lives with dignity and in material security, which was not necessarily a given in the ancient world. It meant that Christian men were allowed to just divorce their wives easily, or to force them to go through abortions or to commit infanticide, as I mentioned before. Their wives were no longer their chattel, but their sisters in Christ. It's a huge shift.
Yeah, it actually also strikes me that women weren't forced to remarry, right? Because if the church was going to be providing them, then they wouldn't have to go back into a marriage if their husbands had died, if they didn't want to. That's kind of, you know, a bit of a cry for the, a single liberated womanhood in that sense.
It is. And compared to what was happening before, that's the important distinction. It's a big shift.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
I think we're all the same in a way. And what makes us different, I guess, is that same as a flower doesn't have family, you know what I mean? They just have their species.
Whether or not there's objectively some universal truth that makes humans more special than anything else, yeah, I can't comment.
Okay, so does all of this raise questions then of how things are likely to go once we've gotten rid of the Christian understanding of the person? You know, what are we going to lose, or what might we lose if that happens?
Well, it's worth considering at least. I often sort of put this to the critics. You know, what are we going to lose when we shake off Christianity? It may be that we can hold on to some of this, but I think it perhaps puts it in peril. I mean, the vision of the human person that's seen so powerfully in Western culture is that it came to understand the place of those least able to contribute and the most vulnerable. there are times in the ancient world, as I said, where people were left out on rubbish dumps and so on. But it's the Christian worldview that sees in each person an irreducible dignity that wasn't possible before. And so all of a sudden, as Christianity takes hold, it's now the destitute, the mentally ill, the handicapped, the wretched, derelict, refugees, criminals. They're now seen as people of value, not to be turned away from or to be killed. And this was a preposterous idea to an ancient person. It takes a while to take root, but it really makes an enormous difference. And I think we have to consider that when we think about what might happen as we move further and further from the Christian worldview.
So what about today then?
Well, there's this story I like to tell. I've shared it with lots of people out of the US. You can see this on YouTube, like most things. But it's of a father and son, Dick and his son, Rick Hoyt. And when Rick was born, he had terrible complications, and he was the family were told that this boy is going to be pretty much a vegetable and you should just leave him in an institution and get on with your lives. But they didn't do that. They said, no, we're going to take him home. And they sat him up in front of the football. They took him swimming. They tried to include him in the family activities as much as they could. When he was about 11 years old, they discovered through this computer technology that this guy was an intelligent mind trapped in a body that didn't work. And he was able to tap out on a computer. The first thing he said was, go the Bruins, which was the local ice hockey team. And everyone was sort of shocked. Oh, he is paying attention, and he switched on. Turns out he's intelligent. He went on to go to university and all sorts of things. And, it's a great story. But you pick up the story from this incredible feat that these two have been involved with. When he was about 12 or 13 years old, the son communicated to his dad that he wanted to go in a local fun run, and 5Ks or 5 miles or whatever. And the dad, who wasn't a jogger, said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll push you in the wheelchair. So he does this, and the boy, Rick, said, it made me feel like I'm not disabled. And he said, can we go? Now, next week there's a 10K run, this sort of stuff. And so you pick up the story as they're doing the Ironman triathlon in Hawaii, which is one of the toughest events on the planet. And you see this father, this old guy, he's like in his 60s, this bull of a man, swimming 3.8 kilometres, towing his son in a boat. Then he carries him out of the boat, puts him on this adapted bike. He rides 180 kilometres through the lava fields in the heat. And then it's dark by this stage, gets off that, puts him back in the chair, and then pushes him a full marathon. And it's absolutely stunning. Wow. And what you see in this picture of this, it's a beautiful picture of a father's love for his son and the value of this human life and the triumph of this achievement. You see, I think this story beautifully encapsulates an understanding of what it is to be a human person. Now, I have no idea, Justine, what the religious beliefs or this family have, if any, but what I do argue is that they come to that place of understanding because of the legacy of the Christian worldview that we've all in some way inherited and absorbed, and that it's a wonderful picture of how that, how that is a beautiful, noble thing that this guy's treated in such a way. It's sort of, the running thing is just a kind of nice picture of that. And this is a profound vision of humanity that comes from a story. It comes out of Christianity in the first century. And, perhaps it's a fragile vision and one worth holding on to.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
Well, Simon, that is a profound story, and I'll be sure to check that out. It's pretty incredible. So next time, we're going to be shifting gears and talking about counterfeit gods, how money, sex, love and power are going to let you down. Join us then.